This is a problem. I got to get my head around this and figure out how. If President Trump can see that all the polling data, which he agrees with and recognizing is accurate, and his base is supportive in the percentages that you're talking about there, it seems like it would be a no-brainer, an automatic to go down that path. And yet that hasn't happened. And I'll ask you why in just a second, but my really worry is that we had Tucker Carlson on the show a couple of weeks back, and he said that he had a similar conversation with Trump right before he's talked about all this. And he laid out all the reasons why there was every reason in the world not to start this war. And yet he did it anyway. There is something going on here that I think we're all missing, is that something that is in his own interest, that's in his wheelhouse, he's not taking. Why not?
Exactly. And I think, you know, my interpretation has been, and in fact, CBS 60 Minutes Australia did an interview with the people who just wrote Regime Change book, who confirmed a lot of things we talked about in sense of Trump's decision-making behavior radically changing from his first term to his second term, especially over the last year. And that's like Trump told them, told Maggie Haberman that he wanted to be seen as a Napoleonic figure. So what you've had is, one part is you've had a personality shift in Trump, not the peace president, not the America restoration president, not the Andrew Jackson president of the working man, not, you know, Abraham Lincoln restoring the republic, not, you know, Teddy Roosevelt taking on the big corporate interest, not the peace president of you know, Reagan and Eisenhower and the Republicans of the 20s, but instead Napoleon wants to be like Napoleon. And yeah, you know, what did Napoleon do? Expand, extend, increase, build empire. And so that's half of the equation. The other half of the equation is that desire to be Napoleonic in view and vision is amplified by his tendency now to only have positive thinking with no objective realism that tethers it. His motivated reasoning is so strong now that he will flip depending on, okay, if he wants A to be true, he'll make up facts 1, 2, and 3. If he wants B to be true, he'll make up the opposite of facts 1, 2, and 3. But he comes to believe it. He confabulates all the time now. He'll once he convinces himself that, okay, I want to go back in, he'll convince himself that only the good things will happen, the bad things won't. But this is being done for his ego. It's not being done to satisfy a political base. It's not being done to satisfy a donor class. Those things might have mattered at some point earlier on, but not now. There's enough data, enough information, enough feedback that he knows that politically there's only one smart strategy here, and it's exit, not escalate. But what's holding him back is his ego. He doesn't want to see the world to know, think of him as a loser. He wants to be seen as a Napoleonic figure. And that enables his confabulation and his drunk on dementia mindset that he recurrently relapses to, that leads us back into conflict over and over again.
Oh, okay. Let's say that he does have these, if he retains any amount, and even a decent amount, forget about full, that's already off the table. But if he remains a decent amount of cognitive capacity to calculate things, let's say that he fully does want to be, you know, a neo-Napoleon. Okay, fine. But you've got to have the ammunition in order to make that happen. You can't go down this, let's go back to full-scale operation, if you don't have the ammo, because then you could be defeated. Then you don't even get to choose the good side here. Here's Mike Waltz a couple of days ago giving some kind of a fake excuse for why it's really not a problem.
A lot of stockpiles were depleted, not only from what we gave Ukraine over the last however many years, 4 or 5 years, and the administration inherited a depleted situation from not only Ukraine, but also the ongoing fight with the Houthis under the Biden administration and a depleted military under the Biden administration. So they have decided, one, they're going to new types of munitions, cheaper munitions, new technologies, but also with these new defense budgets, rebuilding our great military. Clear. The U.S. military, and I've verified this every which way, has everything that it needs to conduct this campaign as effectively as it needs to be. And I have.
Okay, I'll just tell you, that's complete BS. We have a lot of ammunition. We don't have everything that we need to do this kind of thing here. And let me just ask you, first of all, kind of an administrative question here. Does Trump believe what Mike Waltz was saying there, that we have all the ammo we need? Because before I even tell you the rest of it, that might neutralize the rest of my statement.
Well, it's psychological motivation tends to trigger the confabulation. So that's where, when people have been dealing with him during the Iranian conflict, can't get through his confabulation. So I've been telling people, come up with a confabulation that gets us out. You know, whatever it is, you know, whatever fake story, whatever thing, you know, it's amazing what you did. The Iranians are going to build a golden statue to you, Mr. President. It's going to be wonderful, just like the one you got in your library that you're building, and the one you already put on your golf course that blessed by religious leaders. Like, this wasn't a sign that this guy was losing it. I don't know what does. But is that reality only occasionally and sporadically gets through. So, like I said, the way I think of it is the difference between someone that's sober, that's when they're sober versus when they're drunk. And that Trump is sometimes drunk on dementia and sometimes he's sober and of sound mind. When he's sober and sound mind, he understands all this. He understands the political risk, economic risk, military risk, kinetic risk. He understands that Iran will not capitulate and, in fact, will fight back harder and retaliate harsher anytime he does attack them kinetically. But then when he gets into his drunk on dementia state of mind, where he confabulates that everything's going to be great and nothing bad will happen, that was like the buildup to the war, where he sat there and kept telling Vance, you don't know what you're talking about. They'll never close a strait. They'll never close it. You don't know what you're talking about. And he believed this. You know, literally everyone else in the room had told him, no, that's right. We'll get close. So the intelligence people came back just last week and told him about that this was not changing anything. The military people already know this, but what panicked them was the fact that they can't defend their troops. They can't defend the bases at all. The lifetime intelligence meant that they were just a bunch of sitting ducks. So they always knew that the military effort was getting nothing. They could see that in live time. That not only that, militarily, we were hitting dummies at the beginning of the war. Then afterwards, you know, we hit something on the outside of out of one of these big missile mountains, and they just reopened it 24, 48 hours later. I mean, our latest level of impotence and ineptitude was hitting bridges over dry rivers during the dry season. It was like somebody didn't know it was dry season. So the trucks just go right by where the bridge got taken out. What a crock. What a waste of money. What was it, $12 million? We dumped on taking out a bridge they're going to fix in 2 days with a couple of $100,000, maybe $10,000. So, I mean, that they didn't even need anyway because it's not rainy season. I mean, who's doing the math over there? Biggest AI or somebody? But so they're aware of it. Trump's aware of it. What Walz is saying is a complete lie. He just fabricates all the time. He was so nuts and being pro-Israel, that's why he got removed from National Security Advisor. And that's this administration that has done more for Israel than anybody. And they think Walz is so nuts, they can't have him there. So he's just lying. They rolled Walz out because he was willing to lie. You notice Cain wasn't doing those interviews. Notice Cooper wasn't doing those interviews. Notice Vance wasn't doing those interviews. Those guys have a little bit harder time lying with a straight face on those things. So the military limitations are real. But what bothers Trump is not so much Trump confabulates in his head, we're the greatest military ever, we'll be able to fix this quickly, even though he knows otherwise when he's in a sober state of mind. But it's the casualties. He doesn't like them being sitting ducks. He doesn't want to see accumulating casualties. That's why that's part of the reason they've hit it, not just from the public. They've hit it from Trump, how many people have been wounded in this conflict. Hegseth has been particularly bad at that. It's going to want to be one of the things that embarrass him down the road if Democrats take over the House and Senate.
Do you have any sense for what that number is? Publicly, we've said it's around 500 total wounded anyway, and 18 dead. Do you have any different inside info?
The casualties in the thousands. I know that before the conflict started, they thought they would have over 10,000 people if this went longer than 6 months that would be severely injured, not dead. They thought the dead would be somewhere in the teens. But in terms of casualties, which is just wounded, which they don't have to initially report, that what I've heard is that number's already in the thousands. And they've just been keeping as much of a lid on it. And some of the wounds and injuries are the kind they can keep the person alive for, but they really don't expect the person to be functional. They either be disability or it will ultimately be death. It just may be 6 months, a year, 2 years from now because of you're talking about some brain injuries and things like that. So wow. And they've just been keeping a lid on as much of it as possible. That's really Hegseth more than anybody else. The Hegseth was lying all the way through about what our munition shortage was. And Hegseth has been lying all the way through about how many people have been injured. Now they can often keep certain people. We have a lot of those contractors still, you know, in the Middle East. So a lot of the contractors don't show up officially on certain Pentagon disability list. But some of those, but I mean, I think, who was it that? Oh, I think it was Larry Johnson. Larry talked to us. Well, two things. One, there's like 150 medics getting flown into that German air. Well, that's not
lunch school. Yeah,
that usually means by itself, somewhere around 500 additional severe, serious casualties. Not dead yet, but casualties, and you know which counts as the same. And then he I guess I was Larry heard from like somebody who one of these sailors came back home after being out on the Gulf and looked like he'd been emaciated, you know, looked like he'd been eating on an Ethiopian diet. You know, I mean, so that suggests problems too. So my guess is more of these problems will percolate up as time avails, but Trump is still bothered by casualties, which is a good thing, thank God, and bothered by the economic risk and bothered by the political risk. It's his ego and diminished decision-making capacity that continue to be the main obstacle in him exiting from this conflict rather than escalating.
So let me ask you this question, because what you've described there matches what we've seen. For example, the sober, sane President Trump was the one that signed the MOU on the 17th of June and made the very rational comments that, hey, I didn't want to be Hoover and take us into a depression, and our SPR was going to be running, you know, critically low in about 4 weeks. So we had to make this move, which we did. And now then that Trump seems to have gone back to sleep or something like that. And so the question is, at what point does somebody else say, hey, if the wrong Trump is going to make a call here to go back to full scale war when we don't have the ammunition and the weapons, do you think that anyone will ever finally stand up and do something, resign, say no publicly, call alert to this or something? Because here's the thing. This is not just an embarrassment we're talking about. This is not just leaving Iraq after, you know, 2011 or Afghanistan after 20 years. It was embarrassing, but it didn't cost anything. If we go back and do this, Robert, and we take what's limited of the remainder of our long-range strike assets, the good ones, the Jasmines, the Tomahawks, et cetera, we're going to run out of those. And now that our entire – either that or we're going to start robbing from Indo-PACOM or from Europe, and then we're going to be low everywhere, and we won't be able to do anything, and our whole national security would be at risk. Is there anyone on the inside, whether it's in the administration or the Pentagon, that at some point may say, if the wrong Trump calls us to do something that would be suicidal, we're going to have to take some action?
Well, that's kind of what happened this last weekend, was that because Trump was – even though he went back and forth all week, by the end of the week, he was committed to a massive attack and had actually greenlit it and then walked it back. First, I don't want anything to step on the Friday appearance. And then by the weekend, it was like, well, maybe this whole thing I should reconsider and see what happens over the next week. And that was because Vance has continued to lobby for the administration to get out. That's why he's the constant attack of all of these attacks. And so for people that have doubts about that, there's a reason why there's this constant campaign against Vance in the Murdoch media and other related places. It's because they know that he is the lone voice consistently advocating exit, exit, exit. And he's getting better and better at learning how to work Trump. That, you know, you've got to basically convince. I mean, I've told people, let Trump believe he's won magically and the Iranians are they're on their last legs in such a way that they can't ever come back in 20 years from now. So it's no sense in continuing to pound him. Like he was pretending that Graham told him at the end, which Graham definitely did not tell him at the end. So that told me that's Vance, and Vance is learning to work him. And he finally got Cooper and Kane to step up. Kane tends to do this like, oh, well, there's option A and an option B, and there is this risk and there is that risk. That is not how you get through this version of Trump. You get through this version of Trump by saying, if we do this, we're probably going to have 50 more dead Americans next week. You know, you have to say it like that. Then he's like, well, hold on a second. Maybe, wait, what? You know, it's got to be dramatic. And finally, Cooper stepped up and other people stepped up and said that, you know, and were more aggressive in their language. And that's how Trump operates. You got to be, these days, you got to be carefully manipulative and carefully selectively aggressive to get his mind in place. And they've been a little bit slow to understand this isn't the Trump of 5 years ago or even 2 years ago. This is a different Trump. And you got to react to him differently. You got to handle him differently. Just where we recognize you're dealing with King Lear, and how would you get King Lear to do the right thing, even if it's for the wrong reason?
I mean, let me ask the obvious question here. We can't rely on these people at these senior levels to continue to try to figure out how to manipulate or talk to whichever Trump happens to be awake at a given time here for another couple of years. I mean, there's a lot of other things on the table here that could go south.
Well, didn't you always wonder what would happen if we had a clean King Lear as president of the United States? Yeah, you never were curious about that one, the thought experiment?
Thought experiment I'm okay with, but holy crap.
Yeah, as a reality TV show. I mean, think about the drama. You know, every next Wednesday the ratings will go higher because maybe we go to nuclear war, maybe we don't. Maybe we go to only partial nuclear war. No, it's terrifying. It's absolutely utterly terrifying. Vance has told people he alternates between, crying and laughing because he can't be here. And remember, this Vance is a kid. He's only been doing this for like, 3 years, 4 years? He's not a career political guy at all. I mean, he's from Appalachia. And the part of Appalachia, I think they call it Appalachia up there, as Thomas Massey explained. Up north, it's Appalachia. Down south, it's Appalachia, one way or the other. That's where he's from. And here he is trying to babysit a toddler president with the mindset of a toddler to stay out of the most disastrous, not only military and kinetic conflicts, but economic conflicts. I mean, that's what's so unique about this. Korean War didn't pose major direct economic risk to the world economy. Vietnam War did not pose a major global risk. Not even the Iraq War posed a major global risk to the economy. Posed a little more of an economic risk than the others, but nowhere near what the Iran War poses. Because not only that, to give you an idea of how nuts our deep state people are, they are trying to escalate with Russia and Ukraine. They're trying to escalate with Iran and the U.S. They're trying to also escalate with Lebanon. They would like to have a civil war again between Lebanon and Hezbollah. They would like to have Syria, King Head Chopper involved, President Head Chopper in the middle of all that. So to reignite a civil war in Syria, they're trying to reignite a civil war in Iraq. They want that Iraqi prime minister to go after the Iraqi Shia militias. They helped instigate the return of the Yemen Houthi-Saudi war while they're doing all of this insanity vis-a-vis Ukraine, vis-a-vis China economically on the sanctions bill, and vis-a-vis Russia and Iran. I mean, it's insanity at a level that's just incredible. And it's because the Western deep state public intellectual class has so corrosively corrupted and the military-industrial complex so short-term oriented that they're willing to light the world on fire as long as next quarter hits the right earnings ratio.
Okay, I want to argue with you, but I as you're saying all these things, I see headlines in my mind flashing up of each one of them saying, so I see it. So it's playing out right in front of us. It's obviously a titanic struggle for Vice President Vance to be able to try to navigate King Lear. He can't do this. No one who can stand up against this whole thing. What chance do we have that any force or group of people can actually weigh into that I don't even know what you call it, morass that's up there?
You know, the irony is we're going to have to depend on the three governments that the West has caricatured as irrational, as unreasonable, as imperial. It's going to take a combination of Russia's Putin, the Ayatollah in Iran, and Xi and China to keep this from blowing up and exploding around the world. Because China has its own economic interest at stake with global stability in the oil markets, global stability in the economic markets. Its economy is very export-oriented right now because between the COVID lockdowns and their real estate implosion, they can't get the consumer demand that they wanted or needed. So they're trying to export their way out of it by keeping jobs stable, and the quid pro quo between the government and the people is that they'll keep growing prosperity. Putin's trying to, Putin's laid out. I mean, they keep forcing him into a harder line and a harder position. It's just it's insanity on steroids. But Europe won't stop. The American deep state won't stop. And when you have a King Lear at the helm in the U.S., you're going to have to depend on all these other leaders to be able to keep the world calm and from blowing up on us. So it's amazing that that's who we're going to have to depend on. On the flip side, if you were going to depend on any three civilizations to survive and help us all survive in the process, betting on the Russians, the Persians, and the Chinese probably isn't all bad.
Wow. I never thought I would have to hear myself agreeing with something in a statement like that to help us. But again, it's hard to argue with what you're saying. And kind of the last thing I want to talk about here today really kind of ties in with what you just said right there. The fact that Zelensky and Netanyahu are in town right now is because of the king, one might argue, of this cabal of people, and that is the now late Lindsey Graham. And let me just show you this one little soundbite here from, a documentary that was in the process of being shot that really kind of encapsulates just what these people value.
Virtually everything they have has been knocked out now. Their missile count is going way down.
Look what we've done here.
I know.
I almost cried.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how long have we been pushing this?
Well, I mean, you've been pushing this for years, right?
Right. It's here. I talked to Trump this morning.
It's literally.
Oh, he's Jack. Yeah. It's the best thing I've ever done. He loves blowing stuff up. So, you know, there are a lot of people inside didn't want to do it. So I've had my challenges. But President Trump, when he gets into the zone, he listens, he asks good questions, you know, no tweeting. He has done nothing. He hadn't tweeted much at all. No drama. He's been a great wartime president. I said last night that Trump and Bibi are like Roosevelt and Churchill. I mean, they're the right two guys to confront this evil.
To confront the evil. Wait, which evil is he talking about? The one that we're promoting or the one he's out looking for? But holy cow. I mean, just react to that.
Well, you know, they're going to do apparently they're going to rename this, one of the South Carolina naval bases after Lindsey Graham. I have some very crude jokes I could make about how they're going to redesign it, but I'll save that for later. But it gives you an idea of the queen of the war horse that we are giving him the estate funeral. And I got some feedback from some conservative circles. They were like, look, he passed away. Recognize and respect that. I was like, no, this man is more responsible for more murder and more death and more mayhem around the world. Dead children, dead women, dead civilians, dead human beings that never needed to die than any senator in American history. He is a damnable disgrace on the legacy of the United States of America. He puts every American to shame by the wars he endorsed, by the wars he whored for, by the wars he dragged the world into. He was one of the most dangerous human beings to ever occupy a position of power. So his death should have been his funeral today should have been when we put the deep state 6 feet under. And instead, the deep state is using it as an excuse to resurrect once again to all the worst, horrible instincts and impulses that Lindsey Graham personally, professionally, and publicly represented to the world. And let us hope the President Trump takes the sane and the sober path rather than the delusional, drunk, and dangerous path that Lindsey Graham represented his whole life and personified and individualized and manifested. We need to return to the America of the Republic, not the government of Senator Lindsey Graham.
Well, couldn't improve on anything you said. I agree with everything there. And in fact, I might have been able to add a few explicatives to that, but I'll not do that now either. We'll just leave it at that. But thank you so much for coming on. And by the way, and you let me know if there's any tickets left anymore, but here in just a few days from now, we're going to be in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where the 1776 Law Center is going to be putting on a conference here where yours truly will be there, along with Robert Barnes, along with Larry the Shirt Johnson, along with Alexander Mercurius we've had on there, and a bunch of other people. Tell us a little bit about what you expect this conference to be, and are there any tickets left?
Yeah, a few people had to cancel, so there are a few people. There are a few tickets left. 1776lawcenter.com. The two-day event, it's a fundraiser for 1776 Law Center that supports underdog cases and causes, whistleblower cases and causes, everybody from, you know, Brooke Jackson and Dr. Bowden in the Maha arena to people like Jim Webb and Joe Kent in the military arena to be the Amos Miller, the Amish farmer, the Covington kids, you name it. Food freedom, medical freedom, financial freedom, political freedom, causes in the court of public opinion and court of law. And this is the main fundraiser for them. It's going to be a two-day conference. It's going to be Saturday and Sunday this weekend in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Over a dozen guest speakers, including, of course, Daniel Davis, Larry Johnson, Alexander Mercouris, Alex Christoforo, coming in from London and Cyprus alike. Jim Webb is going to be there. Chase Hughes is going to been on Joe Rogan several times about how to discover and how to detect and defeat a CIA-style PSYOP. Greg Hartley and Scott Rouse of the Behavior Panel coming in. Dr. Bowden and Brooke Jackson of the Maha Movement coming in. Michelle Renaud and Amy Miller of the Maha Movement coming in. Richard Barris, the pollster, coming in to talk about.
Wow.
So they'll be talking about what are the third-party independent options, where is the American public on these front lines of freedom. And we'll be discussing ways to reform the intelligence community, the military, how to restore the constitutional republic in the modern era. So if you want to come at 1776lawcenter.com, and we'll love to see you there.
Man, if I wasn't already on the panel, I'd be paying to go see that. That sounds great. We definitely encourage people to go take a look at that. And I assume you'll be publishing some stuff afterwards. So people should be checking on that too.
Absolutely.
Perfect. We'll look forward to seeing there in a few days. And maybe some of you who are watching right now may see all of us there too. We'd look forward to seeing you there. And we'll see all of you on the next episode of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive. Mm-hmm.